Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Serious music, right? So this guy in Kenosha, Wisconsin, is he a hero? Because that's what Senator Harris called him yesterday. Or what's today, Wednesday? Yeah, Tuesday. So the Democratic president candidate for the office of Vice President of the United States calls Jacob Blake, says that she was proud of Jacob Blake. And nobody says shit about it. So, you know, have you ever been around crazy people in your life? And they try to convince you that you're the crazy one. I mean, that down is really up. And they try to convince you of that. And that's how you know that they're, like, crazy. Because you're like, you know, geez, man, my whole life, like, the direction towards my feet has been down. And now, right, he or she is telling me that that direction is now up, that I just had it wrong all this time. And so I feel like I'm living in that world right now. So when Megyn Kelly is the truth teller, I mean, I think that we've got a problem. Or am I the one that's fucked up here? Am I the one that just doesn't get it? Right? So for those of you who aren't tracking, Jacob Blake is the guy in Kenosha, Wisconsin, that the police were called. He was his former, I guess, live-in, called the police on him. He had already beaten her once and been evidently arrested and charged for it. So anyway, that's who Jacob Blake. And then all the riots in Kenosha, Wisconsin, he was shot by police and paralyzed. He's now a hero across the country, Jacob Blake. He's on videos, you know, that he's making, saying that it hurts to breathe. And he's a victim in all of this. Is this my white privilege that is affecting my brain, that I don't get it? And so the Democratic vice candidate for vice president, she says that she's proud of him. And so, and then, like, even weirder, like, Megyn Kelly is the person in the room that stands up and says, wait a minute. And nobody else in the media says shit. I mean, almost, it's almost, reminiscent of like something that would happen in a totalitarian state where everybody sees it, but nobody says shit because you're going to get shot. You know, you're going to get shot in the head if you say shit. That's why they don't say anything in China. That's why they don't say anything in Russia. That's why they don't say anything in Turkey, right? Or in Iran or in North Korea or, you know, go down the list. So this is what Megyn Kelly, of all people, wrote. I mean, this is like how crazy the world is now. Proud of him, question mark. She put this out on Twitter. So let me read you the initial statement that was put out by Ben Crump. He is the attorney for the Blake family. Quote, Senator Harris had an inspirational and uplifting one-hour visit with Jacob Blake Jr. and his family today. She spoke individually with each family member about how they were handling the trauma and urged them to take care of their physical and mental health. In a moving moment, Jacob Jr. told Senator Harris that he was proud of her. And the senator told Jacob that she was also proud of him and how he was working through his pain. Jacob Jr. assured her that he was not going to give up on life for the sake of his children. Senator Harris also discussed the policy changes that she and Vice President Biden will seek, including the Justice in Policing Act and implicit bias training, to make things better for all Americans. She encouraged them to continue to use their voices, even through their pain, to help America make progress and to end systemic racism. So Megyn Kelly writes this, proud of him. He's accused of breaking into a sleeping woman's house, sexually assaulting her, humiliating her, and later returning to harass her. Then the cops she called for help say he resisted arrest, assaulted them, went for his knife. How about a word for his victim, Senator? So, and then the responses to Megyn Kelly are, she's a racist. So, I mean, it's amazing on a daily basis. The stuff that you see in our country. And you have this gigantor mainstream media that watches this kind of stuff and doesn't say anything. You want to know why? Because the totalitarianism of today is the cancel culture. That's why when LeBron James says the things that he says that express a sentiment, nobody asks him a hard question. Nobody says, well, LeBron, can I ask you a question? You know, he had broken into her home and raped her. She called cops. There was a warrant out for his arrest. They attempted to arrest him. He fought them. They tased him. He continued to fight. And then he was reaching into his car for a weapon when he got shot. Does any of that make any difference to you? Nobody's asked LeBron James that. Because they would be the totalitarianism of today would cancel them. So, I mean, it's just astounding, just the stuff you see now on a regular, on a daily basis. On a daily basis. So, welcome to the program this morning. I was a little bit late, a couple minutes late this morning because I was on a phone call with the National Museum of the Marine Corps people. And so I'm going to do a little, I think, kind of interview for them and their guides and stuff like that about post-traumatic winning and my background and how I got here. And the woman who's running it, her name is Nala. Yeah, just like in The Lion King, Nala. So she says, you know, what I find, she didn't know this made me emotional, okay? because I didn't fess up to that. But we're talking. She goes, you know, Mac, what, one of the things I really find interesting is how you come to this and why you would go down this road, because you're not, it's not like you've got a degree in, you know, psychology or anything like that. It's not like this was a, it's not like this was, you know, your life dream to help people like this. And I know the answer to it, but I didn't say anything. I just sat here kind of trying not to be emotional, right? The answer to that is, if you could see the courage that I've seen in my life, if you could see the selflessness I've seen in my life, you would understand. And I love Marines. I love the fuck you attitude of Marines. Our culture is different. It genuinely is. That whole recruiting slogan, maybe you could be one of us, the few, the proud, does us well, because it scares the faint of heart off. And what you're left with is people that they might not be sure, but they'll fucking try. And when you go fight, it's the most incredible thing you've ever seen in your life. And so that's the reason. The reason is that, when you see it, it makes this whole thing very holy. It sanctifies it. I've said before, makes it, that's Catholic talk, right? It sanctifies it, makes it holy. But it's their courage whenever they're called upon, whenever, any time of day, any time of night, any time you need them, they grab their shit and they'll run and they'll come and they'll die. And so that's the motivation behind post-traumatic winning. It's the most incredible experience of my life, seeing them in Iraq and Afghanistan, and then at other points in my career, just when courage and selflessness were required. You don't have to look far when you hang out with Marines. So it's pretty cool. So I'm going to get evidently beyond for only 30 minutes. Like, are you kidding me? Like, how can I, like, I don't, 30 minutes? I won't even be done saying hello in 30 minutes. And so she warned me about that. I'm like, I know, I'll be brief. And, but I do have, I met Nala and a few of her cohorts, or a few of her professional, her peers, that's the right word I was looking for, after I'd done post-traumatic winning in Quantico last year. And they came up to me and they said, we heard about you and we wanted to come see it. And oh my God. And I said, you're from the museum? And they said, yeah. And they said, we're going to have, you know, our Iraq and Afghanistan exhibits open pretty soon. And we know we're going to have to deal with this kind of stuff. And it would be cool. It would be cool. I said, no, you have to get this in there, man. You have to get this in the museum, because you could save people. You could save people. And it should be in the museum, because it all comes from Marines, man. It all comes from this culture of Marines. Not out of the buildings and shit in Washington, D.C., but individual Marines, this mosaic that is post-traumatic winning. So anyway, I was on the phone with her. And I'm excited to hopefully whatever that becomes, to do that. So that's why I was a couple minutes late this morning. The Grant Newsham's going to join us on the program today. And I'll tell you what, we recorded it, late yesterday, and it's a really interesting hour with Grant, and they all tend to be, but Japan's going to get a new prime minister, right? Yesterday in the news, Palau offered the United States basing rights on its island, which as in a major blow to China, who's been trying to get their hands, you know, to break that first island chain containment that they fight. Europe snubbed China. China's foreign minister in Europe last week. He got the back of the hand of the German foreign minister. Germany, who doesn't backhand anybody. Australia and China continue to collide as the Australians searched the homes of Chinese quote unquote media people. They must have had a tip that said they're gathering intelligence. So the Australians did that, and so the Chinese have slowly but surely ejected all the Australian media from China. And I think the last two left yesterday. And so it's an extremely interesting hour. We talk a little bit about the Philippines. I asked Grant, kind of been keeping something with a DOD report on China, 2 weeks ago? And then last week, you know, with Lynch, Kenny, and Cosentini, did Grant think that we would ever go to war with China? So you'll hear that. And so it's pretty interesting hour of stuff. And again, the Philippines, the key role that the Philippines, look at it on the map. If you're going to talk about the South China Sea, who are the dominant land masses in the region? Vietnam, who we have a good relationship and the Chinese don't, and the Philippines, who's trying to get closer to China and away from the United States. So we talk about the significance of the Philippines. So it's a pretty interesting hour. So don't touch that dial. Grant Newsham coming up today. Tomorrow, I don't know that you're going to hear Lynch, Kenny, and Cosentini. You might hear them on Friday. They don't know that yet, but don't tell them. So, and what I want you to hear tomorrow is, I believe, National Suicide Day. And so I wanted to interview somebody who's thought about killing themselves. Thursday, September 10th, Chris Woodbridge. And so told me that. So Matt Kiker is going to come on. And we're going to get an update from Matt. But Matt Kiker told me, you know, without a doubt, I'd be dead if I hadn't crossed paths with you. And so so we're going to talk to him. And we're going to talk to him about that. About where he was, what he thought, and then what's changed him. And how that happened. So, yeah, you won't want to miss that. So tomorrow on National Suicide Day, we're going to talk to a Marine who said without a doubt he'd be dead were it not for post-traumatic winning. And which is pretty cool. And then you'll probably hear Lynch, Kenny, Cosentini on Friday. Yeah, I think so. So with that said, welcome to the Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Somebody sent me an email like, how's the video production going? honestly, you know, I had an epiphany yesterday. I should be a YouTube person. These stories that I tell that you all have found and I think found compelling, YouTube is a huge forum for that stuff to reach millions and millions and millions and millions of people. And I don't have to do anything but retell the stories that I've already told on this program. And I could do that for years without catching up. And so I've got to turn that into a YouTube channel. So here's something you could help me with. What would you call that? You know, what would you call that channel? And what I would tell you is my instinct is to call it Trauma to Joy, the story of post-traumatic winning. And so that's, but it's got to be short, right? So it's got to be short. And so to me, Trauma to Joy is about as short as I can encapsulate. That's three words. So if you have a better idea, and then, you know, the symbol could be T2J, right? So that would be the symbol. I don't know. But I don't want it to be All Marine Radio, because what this channel is, it would be for everybody. This wisdom certainly comes out of, you know, Marines, but it's for everybody. And that's what I want to create. So I had, Colleen and I taped the garage off. All right, so this would be the studio floor. This would be one backdrop. This would be another backdrop. I watched a bunch of videos, and one of the things people say, and I'm not good on this anyway, but they say, you know, I like mess with my first video for a year before I release it. I should have just shot it and released it. Yeah, I ain't waiting around. So we're headed to a store today to buy a backdrop, and we'll start filming sometime soon. And I don't care if the first version sucks, but it'll be out there. And then I'll finish the book, and then we'll rip the YouTube channel open and see where that takes us. So I think pretty exciting stuff. And in fact, as I was thinking about it yesterday, I'm like, why wouldn't I have done that sooner? Probably because I wasn't ready to. I don't know. Mostly probably in my head. But, yeah, so I think that's exciting. So if you have a better name, let me know. But I like trauma to joy. I like the connotation of that. And that's where it goes. It takes you from trauma to joy. And that's why I think it's appropriate. So, yeah, the story of post-traumatic winning. What U.S. Marines taught me about living a great life after trauma darkens your doorstep. That would be the whole title. First line, Trauma to Joy. Second line, The Story of Post-Traumatic Winning. Third line, What U.S. Marines Taught Me About Living a Great Life After Trauma Darkens Your Doorstep. After trauma invades your life. I don't know if darkens your doorstep is ominous enough, or if some people wouldn't understand it. Invade your life. So, yeah. Yeah. So this morning, the United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. And I'm excited. Why am I excited? Because every day this thing gets bigger. And every day more people get their lives, you know, every day more people get their lives changed by it. And so, you know, I have good friends that haven't seen it. F-18 man, that ass clown, he hasn't seen it. He's had a million chances to. He always has a reason not to see it. Right? Napa man, he's never seen it. Yep, he runs from it. Yep. Montana man, he never seen it. Although Montana man was supposed to see it this week, next week. But I'm not going to Montana because of some issues they had to reschedule that event. So I'm excited because, you know, and here's what I found. It was kind of interesting even my conversation this morning. Because I get asked, why do you think this is so powerful? And my answer is this. Because most people don't know that there's another path that they could go down. And that's what I find. That the primary way that we get taught that we'll cope with this is through medication and going to talk and group therapy. That's what we get told by the people. We get told, you're supposed to go see these guys. And so, okay. Well, if that's all you have to offer me, that's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty bleak view of the rest of my life. And I talk about that's the endurance path. That's the path of endurance. And so what is powerful about it? Two things. And it's and honestly, it's coaching. And that's why I say you don't need to be a PhD to help people. You don't need to be a PhD to be a coach. Because all this is like normal stuff, man. It's normal stuff of life. Like, would you hesitate to talk parenting with somebody? No. Are you a clinical expert in parenting? Well, no, but I've raised four kids. I have an opinion. I think it's a fairly informed opinion because I care about being a good parent. And I think I've tried hard, and I think I've, you know, I OJT, man. Is formal schooling the only way? Absolutely not. There's some pretty qualified people in their fields that have only done OJT. So anyway, so I think that that's what this is. That's what this is. And so what is the power of it? It's that fourth path, man. Trauma to joy. That's right. So anyway, if you have a name suggestion, fire that thing up. I'm all ears. Kinda. I'd like that. It's short. And I think in three words, anybody who's lived through traumatic experiences that has struggled with them, would they look at that and say, you don't see those words shoved together very often? What is that? And that's I think what I'm that's what everybody looks for, right, in a title. So that's what I would look for in a title. You don't see those words together very often. Why don't I check that out? And then, boom, yeah. So anyway, good Wednesday morning to you. Grant Newsham, like I said, very interesting hour. And what's interesting is that the Chinese are getting pushback all over the planet, which we haven't seen. I've been paying attention now since I met Grant, and all you see is people rolling over for the Chinese, for their gangster-like use of their economy. Well, Australia has said no. Palau said no. The Germans just backhanded them in public, which is like, what? Yeah, so it's pretty interesting, pretty interesting. Here's an email. Oh, Mac, you're not crazy. It is amazing on a daily basis to read the news. And now, watch what transpires and then see how it's reported on. I'm with you. Except I'm only 35. But I feel like everybody's afraid to talk about the truth. And if you do talk about the truth, you'll be canceled. Yeah. Cancel culture. Totalitarianism in the 21st century. From Libby. Charging into the light. First of all, that's four words. Okay, that's Libby's suggestion. So, live.almarinradio@gmail.com. If you got a suggestion, let it rip. So, the United States Marine Corps Band makes this Wednesday official. Good morning to you. And I have to tell you something. Libby, who just sent me the email, lives in Alabama, right? The guy you're going to hear in this is from Alabama, Jack Riley. Libby's son, Luke, right, who was the first test case of post-traumatic winning, he obviously lives in Alabama. Matt Kiker, who you'll hear from tomorrow, lives in Alabama. Gene Sledge, who you heard from, is from Alabama. Now, I don't want to say post-traumatic winning has been heavily influenced by Alabama, by the state of Alabama, because I don't want to swell anybody's head, but if I didn't say that, it would be a lie. It's an interesting coincidence, right, that all these things come from that state. So maybe the air's cleaner, the water's fresher, the education better, the folks have a little bit more common sense. I don't know what it is, but it seems to be more than a coincidence that the state of Alabama has had such a huge impact on post-traumatic winning. But it makes me laugh. And here's one of their native sons. This is dedicated to the people at the National Museum of the Marine Corps. You guys have an opportunity to embrace, in a little way, post-traumatic winning, and in doing so, expose people to it. So, as I told them this morning, or as I told Nala this morning, don't screw this up.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the Corps, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me, I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
All right. I've added a couple more. I dropped Afghanistan. And I dropped Al Anbar. I think the president at some point is going to make an announcement today about drawing troops down even more in both those countries. Anyway, I've added a couple more countries. Currently, Marine Corps Base Quantico, it is cloudy and 77. Down the coast at Camp Lejeune, it is cloudy and 80 at 29. What? That can't be right. At 29 Palms, it is sunny and 70? Doesn't sound right to me. Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton, partly sunny and 67. Camp Smith in Hawaii, dark cloudy 73. Okinawa, dark cloudy 79. Yeah, and the two new additions in the Darwin Territory of Australia. Yeah, where Marine Rotational Force Darwin serves. It is clear, dark, and 77 degrees in northern Australia and in Norway, where the 2nd Marine Division spends a fair amount of time. It is sunny and 62. And so that is a look at your weather. When we come back, we'll take a look at news headlines. Yeah, the president's supposed to announce both further drawdowns in Iraq and Afghanistan. And again, this may come as a shocker to you if you haven't been paying attention to it. But United States President Donald Trump has been nominated for the 2021 Nobel Peace Prize. The nomination was submitted by Christian Tybrig Gjedde, a member of the Norwegian Parliament. Trump helped broker a peace deal between Israel and the United Arab Emirates in August. So, about that? What? Exactly, man. How about that? Amazing. All right, so we'll talk about that a little bit. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up, and then Grant Newsham coming up a little bit after the top of the hour. So more of this fine program next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back, and that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, and he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis. But sometimes, reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, to the news we go. It is 46 minutes after the hour here on a Wednesday, hump day, on a short week. Headline, Stars and Stripes. U.S. to cut troops in Iraq to 3,000 this month. Whoa. How about that? United States will withdraw almost half of its troops from Iraq this month, reducing its force to about 3,000 service members, the top U.S. general overseeing operations in the Middle East announced today. Marine General Kenneth McKenzie, commander of U.S. Central Command, announced this almost 6 years to the day after the United States first launched military operations against the Islamic State along the Iraq-Syrian border. It also comes as President Donald Trump has continued to denounce U.S. involvement in long-running wars in the Middle East and Afghanistan, from which he vowed to disentangle U.S. troops since his 2016 election. So this is from General McKenzie. Quote, in recognition of the great progress the Iraqi forces have made and in consultation and coordination with the government of Iraq and our coalition partners, the United States has decided to reduce our troop presence in Iraq from 5,200 to 3,000 troops during the month of September. This reduced footprint allows us to continue advising and assisting our Iraqi partners in rooting out the final remnants of ISIS in Iraq and ensuring its defeat, its enduring defeat. Now, who's leaving? That's my question. The United States has maintained about 5,200 troops in Iraq for most of the 6 years. The troops were sent primarily to train and advise. Nonetheless, some American troops fought on the front lines, with at least 21 U.S. service members being killed and 231 wounded in the fighting against ISIS in Iraq and Syria since 2015. All right, so who's leaving? In his remarks on Wednesday, McKenzie hinted the United States would not fully withdraw from Iraq in the near future, where there remained, quote, much work to be done. So, again, shocker in an election year, the American public's told that we're going to, draw troops down. But, big story. Airman in gutter becomes the first deployed member of the Space Force. Hoo-ah! B-52s in a show of force maneuver near European and African hotspots. How about that? Marines and the Air Force in Japan both ease coronavirus restrictions as infection numbers dip. A headline from yesterday, Pacific Nation of Palau offers to host U.S. military bases. RIMPAC going on, right? Ships from the U.S., Japan, South Korea, and Australia sail together to Guam after RIMPAC. So RIMPAC is big in terms of its symbology relative to China. So here's a quote from a captain in the South Korean Navy. This exercise provides opportunities that can enhance a steadfast and flexible coordination system, said Captain Kim Sung-hwan, Commodore of the South Korean Navy's Maritime Task Squadron 71. It will also serve as an opportunity to strengthen joint response capabilities for various security situations by building up the friendship and the coordination system between participating nations. What he's saying is that, we get on radios and we talk to each other. We do stuff together, which, let me tell you, is no small thing, just being able to communicate. I mean, hell, we found out during, Grenada, that we couldn't even talk to each other. Didn't have the right radios to speak to each other. Go figure, right? That's inside the United States military. So since then, we've been solving that issue. But that's why RIMPAC's so important. The other thing is, American security relative to China, the world security relative to China, are these alliances. And, that's why it's important that India participate. It's important that the Philippines come back and participate at some point. So we'll see how long Mr. Duterte is there. But the Philippines being in the sphere of free nations is a significant thing, simply because of their proximity to all those fortified islands. And And Marines on ships, I'm not real excited about that. Too easy. Ships are easy. Yeah. Do you think there won't be drones that monitor ships from a distance of how many feet? Small drones that get thrown off merchant vessels that just attach to you and beak probably some encrypted, they beep and they track you. Now you got to go out and find that little drone beeping, and then you got to destroy it. So, I don't know. I don't know how you do that. Anyway, but if you could be ashore in the Philippines and if you could be ashore in Vietnam, that would be a problem. So, in another story, the Navy calls off a search for a U.S. sailor reported overboard in the Arabian Sea. The Navy ended the search for a missing U.S. sailor in the North Arabian Sea 48 hours after a man overboard alert was sounded aboard the USS Nimitz aircraft carrier. The Nimitz and a guided missile cruiser, USS Princeton, began the search for 29-year-old Petty Officer Second Class Ian McKnight on Sunday after officials conducted a muster and thoroughly searched the carrier for him, Commander Rebecca Reberich, spokesman for the Bahrain-based U.S. 5th Fleet announced. Search and rescue operations began after the alert was sounded at 6:47 p.m. that day. The extensive search effort failed to find the information systems technician who'd pinned on Petty Officer Second Class rank in August. So this is the part that, you know, that I was talking about yesterday. So when they list you as duty status whereabouts unknown, what that would tend to make you believe is that nobody actually saw anybody go in the water. So earlier in the story, you hear that it was a man overboard call on the USS Nimitz, and not simply they didn't show up for work. This paragraph talks to that. His next of kin had been notified that he was listed as duty status whereabouts unknown. That casualty status is used when there's not enough evidence to determine the sailor's cause of the sailor's absence, but officials have reason to believe it's not voluntary and unauthorized absence, or UA, the Navy equivalent of AWOL. Petty Officer McKnight is from North Carolina, enlisted in February of 2018, was assigned to the Nimitz in February of 2019. His disappearance remains under investigation. So anyway, we'll keep his family in our thoughts and prayers. But again, those things have become more complicated in recent years. Now, we've been paying attention to the talks in Afghanistan as the Taliban get ready to sit down with the federal government of Afghanistan. Here's a headline for you. Afghan vice president survives bomb attack that kills 10. Vice President Amrullah Saleh survived an assassination attempt Wednesday when a powerful bomb exploded in central Kabul as he drove past. At least 10 civilians were killed in the blast, which Saleh said was so powerful it melted the windows of his car. Saleh sustained slight burns to his hands and face, and several of his security guards were among at least 15 people who were wounded, Interior Ministry officials said in a statement. The Taliban, of whom Saleh has long been a fierce critic, have denied involvement in the attack. No other group has claimed responsibility. So that's interesting. So who would want to do this just as the Afghan government and the Taliban are sitting down? Good question. From the Wall Street Journal, U.S. stocks rise after a tech sell-off. So both the S&P 500 and the Dow are up today, mostly on the back of technology stocks that have been sold heavily over the course of the last week. Other big stories. Students head back to school for a year like no other. What's interesting, and I saw this kind of article about Notre Dame. Notre Dame has students back on campus, and they haven't sent them home. In spite of they all showed up and they all had parties, and then the COVID numbers went up. I saw something essentially where they said it's our responsibility to do what we did during World War II, during the Spanish influenza, during World War I, and every other catastrophe that's befallen this country, is to find a way to fight through this. After all, we are the Fighting Irish. Notre Dame has this big thing of what would you fight for? And so I think there's a lot of school districts around the country that have simply, you know, said, yeah, we're not doing it. Until we get a vaccine, we're not doing it. And I will tell you this. If you have good students in your household, that's not so much of an issue. But for the rest of us, me paying attention to a Zoom class, are you kidding me? I would have found a way to have another monitor above my monitor that I have to pay attention to, right? So that without moving my eyes, I could see, right, something else, whether it be a Yankees game that would be on, or maybe a replay of last night's Yankee game that was on, or maybe I just played the one out of the archives on the MLB channel. I'd be watching that, staring at it, and not paying a fucking bit of attention to the clock. Hey, I would have figured that out. I would have cracked the code on that. Or I just have my friends. We'd have our own Zoom chat window above that. And I'd be acting like I was paying attention. And I'd be just talking shit with them. So my point is this. For people that like me that were average students, were more interested in screwing off than they were in learning. And then what about poor students? What about them? I mean, I think it's a moral responsibility for the education system to find a way to fight through this. And if people want to keep their kids at home, that's one thing. But it seems like there's many school districts across the country, they just say, no, we're not doing it. And I don't. To me, that's not very American. What it is to be an American is to fight through this stuff. And I don't care if it's a Dust Bowl, the Depression, or whatever challenge gets put in front of Americans. I mean, I think what's quintessentially American is to fight through it. So, that in the news today. I mean, what the hell? They've reopened the schools in Wuhan in China. Right? So, yeah, I don't know what else to say. Right? The schools are open in Wuhan. So if Wuhan could do it, maybe that should be a memo to everybody else. I'm just saying. But there used to be a day and age when we got fired up for challenges in this country. And I don't know. It seems like now we roll over pretty quick. Top stories in... top stories in Marine Corps Times, and this one's going to require music. All right. Big music, because this is a big announcement. Marine Corps has announced, after the Navy, the United States Navy, the most struggling service inside the DOD, the Navy announced that they would resume physical fitness tests. The Marine Corps has decided it too. Well, hell, if the Navy could do it, we could do it. Right? Please. The United States Marine Corps will resume physical fitness and combat fitness tests after a pause. Congratulations. Who's the genius that figured this shit out? All fitness tests were suspended as of April 21st because we could not figure out a way how to do pull-ups, how to run, and how to do sit-ups or whatever, crunches or whatever the hell you want to call them, socially distanced. That was too hard, but we're going to go fight the Chinese and figure out all this hooky-roo, how to make a ship invisible shit, right? Bad message, right? Bad message. All the PFTs that will happen in the next 90 days will be recorded as taking place on June 30th, 2020, the normal end of the Marine Corps PFT season, according to the MAR admin. Wow. Amazing. Well, hey, congratulations, right? You know, it's a baby step. But, I mean, what the hell? At least it happened. Interesting story about the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This is in Military Times. Quote, I sought help when I needed it. Joint Chiefs Vice Chairman speaks out about mental health. Air Force General John Hayton, Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, shared a glimpse into his personal struggles with mental health in a video Tuesday encouraging service members to seek help. Quote, I sought help when I needed it. When I was commander of U.S. Strategic Command, I felt like I needed to get some help. I felt like I needed to talk to somebody. So I got an appointment with a psychiatrist. Well, you don't need me to. Here's him.
Hello, I'm General John Hayton, and I serve as Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I'm here to talk to you about a national public health concern, suicide. Suicide impacts all of us and has become the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. To help prevent suicide among America's armed forces, we're working relentlessly to better connect. Connecting with family, friends, community, and resources such as Military OneSource is critical to our well-being and our preventing suicide. And to do this, we need to start with our chain of command. I sought help when I needed it. When I was commander of U.S. Strategic Command, I felt like I needed to get some help. I felt like I needed to talk to somebody. So I got an appointment with a psychiatrist, and I was kindly offered an anonymous backdoor entry, and I rejected it. If I'd had the flu, I'd walk through the front door to see the doctor. This was no different. Our mental and physical health are equally as important. They're the same thing. I got the help I needed, and I'm stronger for it. So don't hesitate to get professional help. There are no negative consequences to your career and only positive results for you personally, for your family, and your friends. It's important that the U.S. military brings light to this complex issue of suicide because regardless of which uniform you wear, we're not immune from life's challenges, including thoughts of suicide. Ending suicide in our ranks is a top priority, not just during Suicide Prevention Month in September, but throughout the year. So I ask you to do your part. Connect to protect. Leaders, reach out to your people. Check in on them. Follow up with your buddy. Set aside time to listen, provide support. Watch their six on and off base. If you or someone you know are in a crisis, know that you're not alone in this. Reach out. Contact the Military and Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. Press 1. Text 838-255 or chat online with the veteranscrisisline.net. It's free, confidential, available 24/7. Caring and trained responders, many of them veterans, can help you. If you need help, please reach out.
General, Lieutenant, General, four stars. The assistant? Is he the assistant or the... Oh, he's the vice chairman, right? Sorry about that. But yeah, he's the one who was... the big hearing in the Senate about him, and he's accused of sexual harassment, which he denied. Normally, that's a dead man walking. You don't make it out of that one. And he fought it, and he was confirmed. So there he is, in front of God and everybody. So well done. Interesting. He was offered a back door, not like a figurative back door, but you don't need to come in the front entrance. You can come in the back entrance. He said, no, I'll come in the front entrance. So good for him. That story is out there today. And then the top five stories in Early Bird are these. Grant Newsham coming up next. One, U.S. Navy searching for missing Nimitz sailor in the North Arabian Sea. So the Early Bird has not been updated. So we don't have to worry about the top five stories according to them. I was going to do some overseas headlines in terms of operation, but I won't. We'll take a break. When we come back, you'll hear Grant Newsham. And I'll tell you a segment that's pretty interesting. Let me read you an email. This is about Megyn Kelly. I've never been a Megyn Kelly fan. I certainly don't consider her somebody that I would go to relative to news. But I will say this. It's astounding to me how on a daily basis people avoid the most basic truth. I listened to the program where you read from that website, lawofficer.com. So I went to the website. What is going to happen in Minneapolis and around the country when these officers are exonerated? What is going to happen to the officers in Rochester? It seemed to me what we saw in Minneapolis, we saw again in Rochester. The optics are horrible, I will grant you that. But what's going on physiologically inside of a human being because of the drugs that they've ingested is they are dying. The police happen to be there and are attempting to restrain. The knee to the back of the neck of Mr. Floyd did not kill him. But it certainly looks like it did. And Mac, as you said repeatedly, it's all about the video. The video of the guy in Rochester is horrible. But what were the police to do? I wouldn't give you a nickel to be a cop in any city in this country right now. God bless them for even showing up to work, for God's sake. And Megyn Kelly pointing out the truth, while inconvenient, was an act of courage on her part. And I did look it up. And the responses underneath what she said were all typical. She's a racist. God help us when the truth doesn't matter. And I think we've reached that day. I hope he or she does. Yeah, let me tell you, that's to me. Look, the weak leaders that you see in Seattle, that you see in Portland, that you see in Los Angeles, and that guy in Minneapolis is terrified. What is going to happen to him, you know, when those police officers aren't convicted of the charges that have been levied against them? And I think what that guy says is interesting, because this whole concept of what's the name of that term? Excited delirium. Lawofficer.com. I'm just curious to see what they have. Headlines. If you go to that website, and it's interesting because this is insight into the law enforcement community, right? Top headline on lawofficer.com is Dallas Police Chief joins list of law enforcement officials tendering resignations. She a black woman. Rochester Police Chief Deputy retire amid Daniel Prude controversy. The chief is black, his deputy is white, and all of their subordinates resigned as well. So anyway, one of the things that you read about the whole excited delirium thing is he explains this condition of excited delirium and that there's this chemical thing combined with the psychological impact of, for instance, in Mr. Floyd, he had fentanyl and meth in his system. He's COVID positive and something else. I can't remember what. And all that's colliding, and they recognize this condition, which is known as excited delirium, where it says in this white paper that the suspect will likely die, blah, 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 blah. So that was the first time I'd read about it. So what you see, the optics of what you see, belie what's going on inside the suspect, which is this fatal concoction of drugs. And so it looks like the police are causing this, and the reality is that it's not that way. Now, the Rochester thing, they cite asphyxiation as one of the causes of death. So they'll have to sort through that. But the police are in a very difficult position in trying to subdue these people that are in this condition. Interesting story here. It's an interesting website. And it's called lawofficer.com. And again, it gives you insight into the law enforcement community, the things that they're saying. So there's an opinion piece entitled "Black Father Writes LeBron James an Open Letter Explaining the Need for Police." Police are needed where fathers and law and order is absent. So this is a picture of a black man and his four sons. It's kind of a cool picture because they're all wearing the same shirt, right? It's one of those family pictures. And so the story cites LeBron James tweeting, "We are scared as black people in America. Black men, black women, black kids, we are terrified." And there's a video. In response, a black father wrote an open letter to the Los Angeles Laker player, reported Black Enterprise. The man, Patrick Hampton, who is a Trump supporter, posted a letter on his Facebook page and advises James to stop blaming the police and help build better fathers. The full letter is printed below. And again, this guy's name is Patrick Hampton. "Dear LeBron, in your latest celebrity race bait hate remarks objecting to the actions of police attempting to arrest that gentleman, Jacob Blake, for aggravated sexual assault, shooting him after he fought them and brandished a deadly weapon, you declared black men, black women, black kids, we are terrified. LeBron, you don't speak for me and my boys. I'm a father of four brown boys. It is my responsibility as a father to protect and serve them. There is no need for police in my home because as the father, I'm the authority in my home. Police are needed where fathers in law and order are absent, when there is no father to protect and serve children. Police have to move into that community to protect and serve. Where there is no father or authority in the home or neighborhood, young men rebel. This is why police have a hard time gaining confidence and compliance with fatherless boys on the side of the road. They refuse to sit down, be quiet, to comply. Why? Because the police are the first men to tell them no and assert their authority. These boys have spent their lifetime under no man's authority. A failure to recognize and respect authority is a primary causal factor in the violence besieging our urban areas. You don't speak for me and my boys. We are not terrified of the police because we respect the police and accept their authority. That's because my boys first had to respect me as their father and accept my authority. Actually, one of them wants to be a police officer. You, LeBron, are trying to destroy that dream by painting police officers in a negative light when most are good guys. In fact, what should terrify black men, black women, black kids are the black men that kill each other in their black neighborhoods every day. We are afraid of black men that threaten us for desiring to live in a peaceful, lawful, and successful life. We are aware of the fact that almost 90% of all black homicides are committed by black men. You focus on the handful of white-on-black officer-involved shootings but ignore the epidemic of black-on-black murders, rapes, and violent assaults, choosing instead to adopt the Marxist BLM mantra about condemning the police. If you really want to help fatherless boys like yourself, stop using fear tactics and guilt trips. Stop supporting political parties or political policies that enslave black people on urban poverty plantations, promoting broke families. Start promoting legislation for equal shared parenting, which empowers divorced dads and single dads to have more time with their children without paying more child support. Help get legislation passed to make child support more fair and equal. Fund programs like hashtags good guys, hashtag good girls mentorship curriculums to help black youth learn to respect authority, develop a work ethic, and accomplish their goals. Stop blaming the police and help build better fathers and families. Stop saying police need more training and start training more dads and young black boys on the rule of law and police protocols. Remember, there are millions of black and brown boys out there that are not being killed by police. They are alive and doing quite well because they acknowledge authority. With all due respect, Patrick D. Hampton. So anyway, no, that email, you know, again, when Megyn Kelly is the only one that'll, you know, call out the, you know, the Democratic vice presidential nominee. And again, what Kamala Harris said in an exchange is with Jacob Blake was he talked about how much he respected her. And she said, I respect you and, you know, your struggle, you know. But again, is that going to come back to be a phrase in a national campaign that will be used against her? And what about the victim? Haven't been too much discussion about that. She's the one that called the cops. So anyway, all right, we'll take a break. Tomorrow, September 10th, is National Suicide Day. So you're going to hear from Matt Kuiker. And he's probably the first Marine that ever told me that if he hadn't seen post-traumatic winning, he'd be dead. So I talked to him yesterday, and Matt's out of the Marine Corps doing good. So you'll hear from him. So fired up about that, and then you'll probably hear Lynch Kenny on Friday. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up. And then Grant Newsham on the backside of this. So more of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.